So I am curious, how was that? Yeah, Nana then Amanda.
Yeah, it was really interesting because I think it's the one of the structures that I really have a feeling of knowing so well. And I realized I've been working with the themes of this in therapy and IFS so many times, and yet even talking about it again, it's still there. It's like this wallow, this whale that will swallow me again and again and again. And seeing it from this point of view, I sort of, I work with the Enneagram, and as my type 7, I can see, okay, what it is that I'm trying to save other people from or save myself from. Really, this knowledge that I sort of, I make this into a sort of a knowledge that is, or that life is, that I am isolated, that we are isolated, that God does not exist, that we do not care for each other, really.
Yes.
And I have to surrender, it's like a crucifixion I go through again and again.
And it's very interesting exactly what you're saying, that you turn it into a knowledge, that it's like this is not just a feeling, this is a fact, right? The re you see that the you believe that the reason you have this feeling is because the world is like that.
And what is wild is, even though I know that this is what I've done, I still do it. And then I often say I have to meditate in the shadow every day, because if I don't, I get unbalanced. And this is the knowledge. I have to dive into it and sort of say, okay, I accept, I believe it's true. And only when I surrender there, something inside of me will do like this and go, it's not true. It's not the truth.
Yes, but it's interesting, right? Because I'll say a little something and then I'll say a lot more about it after the break. So, as a type 7, you know how there is that tendency to sort of like paint a rosy picture so we don't have to feel the isolation. Here's the thing. Maybe as crazy as it sounds, the isolation is like painting the rosy picture in that it saves you from something else. And then what is it saving you from, right? So that's the thing that we want to look at next time. Remember, the P model is a layered model. Each layer saves you from the next. So the aggression and the defensiveness is one way that you can save yourself from the isolation. Of course, the rose-colored glasses is another way. So, but then you say, well, actually, the isolation, it feels terrible, but we deliberately create the feeling because if we don't, we become aware of something that we are even less happy about becoming aware of.
So the beast would be right under. Is that what you think?
Exactly.
So, or that's the
That's it.
point.
Exactly. Yes.
But that's brilliant, Klaus. Sorry, it's like a thousand things in my brain. That's brilliant.
Exactly. Because you remember, one of the things I said is the feeling of the isolation is like the feeling you have when you think there's a monster under the bed. What monster is that, right? That's the beast.
That's the beast. The funny thing is, that's the only sentence you said that I could not relate to this point. Because really, I relate. I think it's the point I would relate to like that. It's so easy for me. But the beast under the bed is not, it's not to my conscious knowledge.
No, but that's the next thing we're gonna look
Of
at.
course, That's because I won't even acknowledge that it's there. That's your point, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's all right. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, so you have something to look forward to. Good. Thanks. So, Amanda, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just following that in my mind, what you're saying about the beast, because I really feel in, I was in my inquiry really in touch with the feeling and pain in my chest, like, well, sensation of soreness, soreness. And then when you were talking there to Nana about the layer, which I forgot about, I went for a walk. I go for walks every day. And I realized, you know, something was being acted out constantly. And there's this lonely feeling on and off, but really predominant at the moment. And I thought, what is it I've been acting out? And I realized I was really angry with God.
Yes.
You know, like, I was furious, you know, like, well, if you're not going to help me with this, if you're not going to help me, I have to do it myself.
That's it.
That's what I've been acting out. I'm furious.
Yes.
How so is I don't it? Know if that's the beast.
That you are ahead of schedule, yes. How is it to say that? To say, well, actually, there's a side of me that's just furious with God. It's like, what the hell, right? It's like omnipotent being, and still you create me to suffer and leave me in this crap.
Yes. And what's made it worse is that I actually had been previously experiencing oneness. So yes. It feels even worse.
Yes.
Like, now I've been abandoned.
Yes.
Now you let me feel that. And now I feel completely back in my suffering.
Yes.
And why?
The experience of oneness occurred when?
Sorry?
When did you experience the oneness?
Well, I think it's been a gradual process of becoming aware of, I really had quite a profound sense of, oh my God, everything is the same, and that's me, and really quite profound sense of connection, actually, the opposite of this.
Yeah.
And really felt it, and it wasn't like in my head, I thought, oh my God, I've got to tell everyone about this. This is amazing. I can't believe this, that, you know, everything's just dropped away, and the suffering's in the ego structure, and this is where we're supposed to be, and, you know, and now I'm cursing God, you know.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. This is the this is the tough thing about the process being going like this.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You when you gain insight, when you gain experiences of being, of whatever you want to call it, and then you lose it again, right? You lose the connection, you lose the awareness. It's harder because you were there, you remember. It's like you go to the top of the mountain, you have the view, and then you return to the lostness. And the lostness feels, when you didn't know that there was an alternative, you could kind of deal with it, right?
Yeah, precisely. I could deal with it.
I mean, it's been used in different ways, but I suppose you're familiar with the concept of the dark night of the soul, which is exactly, it's like many, many people will tell the same story through a life event, through connection with a teacher, through grace, you get a glimpse of the oneness of the of being, of like, you know, the mystical experience. And it's wonderful. And then you lose it. And then you have to sort of sometimes they talk about it, like, especially it's very common to talk about it with teachers, right? The teacher takes you to the top of the mountain, you see the view, and then you roll back down the mountain and now you have to climb it yourself. And on the one hand, it's good to have had the experience. You know what's possible. You're not confused about that anymore.
No, but I can't get there.
No, that's the thing. That's the thing. It's it can be problematic. Claudio Naranjo disappeared from public from the publicity for like I think a decade.
Why?
He thought his whole life work was nothing. He thought the whole thing had been in vain. There was nothing. It was all just confusion and deceiving himself. Dark night of the soul.
10 years, God.
I'm not saying it has to last 10 years. I'm saying that you know, even people that like that, right? They who has really profound insight. And yet, sometimes you hit this, and I think it helps knowing about it. It helps knowing that this is a thing, this can happen. And so, you might feel the despair, the you know, the anger and all of these kind of things. But you also know what it is. You don't necessarily get confused about it. It helps. It helps when you have some time where you just you walk the earth, but you're not feeling it. You're not in contact with it.
The only thing that I think that the positive thing that I clung to, because I didn't want to feel like the beast and angry, is that. It continually helps me to realize people suffering, you know, that people just cannot help being who they are. It's like I feel helpless. It's like I didn't get to that place. I didn't do anything, and I didn't do anything to make that disappear. It's like I'm not doing anything, and that's the frustration.
Yes.
Is that I just look like it's just endless kind of trying to, I don't know, understand something.
Yes. I mean, doing this work is doing something. Is it gonna be doing this work doesn't mean that you can schedule it, but you have a much better chance that than if you didn't do the work, right? It's kind of like what you can do is invite it, and that's all you can do. Keep inviting. One of the ways that you can invite it is to develop very clear awareness of different patterns in yourself, and then contemplating what is there beyond it. That's sort of like you tune your radar, and then you wait for an answer. But you won't get an answer if you don't tune your radar. You know it from meditation, right? You sit down, you meditate. I don't know about you, I cannot guarantee that I feel the kind of spaces that I know are possible in meditation. Sometimes I sit down and my meditation is just looking at mess in my head, right, for a set of amount of time. But if I didn't meditate, I wouldn't experience the essences in the profound way that you can in meditation. So I think it's So that's where we are. And you say you didn't do anything to lose it. I think you might find that maybe you did. It was just automatic and unconscious. But that's, of course, that's, we constantly balance on this, right? Technically, it's you who did it, but it wasn't within your conscious control, so it doesn't really feel like you did it.
You mean to make that experience go?
Yes.
Well, I think if I was doing anything, I was thinking. I remember just more thinking was coming in.
Yeah.
Just that, but it didn't feel like I was. So I think I was trying to do something at, like.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it just felt like, oh, start thinking about it, and then it's gone.
Yes.
You know, over time, but it was like a gradual, it was a real physical sensation, a bit like having like warm rain fall into your brain. And then when it's going, it's like you feel the warm rain going away, but very gradually.
Yes.
So it's very gentle.
Yes.
And when you're in it, it's no big deal. It's like, oh, well, it's only afterwards that you think, oh my God, what was that? Mm-hmm. It, you know, because you're contrasting now.
Yeah.
Where you are with, oh my God, what was that? Yeah. That exists. And exactly. Now you're kind of, your brain's going like crazy, like, what was that? I didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
Oh my God! You know, it's true.
Yeah.
And it's not these ideas, and it's not an idea. It's a reality.
Yeah.
It is a reality.
Yes.
It's just most of the time we're not in that reality. We're in this reality.
Yeah.
Feeling this.
Exactly. I'll just give you a small story that for me illustrates this situation very, very well. I remember at some point I took some yoga classes, and there was a brilliant yoga teacher here in Copenhagen. One of the exercises that he did was very interesting. He would let us go together two and two, and you would get like a belt around your waist and down through your legs. You would go into the down dog position, and somebody would pull the strap, and all of a sudden you would feel like, oh my God, my spine can become so long, and my pelvis can go so far back over my feet, right? It's like, so you feel in your body, wow, this is possible. And then, of course, your friend is no longer pulling you, and now you go like, okay, now I have to figure out how to get into that pose by my own effort. And this is... So when you've had the profound peak experiences, or what you want to call them, they are great because they give you a direction, and because they give you knowledge about what's possible. It's no longer a leap of faith. It's not a theoretical. You're no longer just believing what it says in the books. But it's also frustrating because you just want to get back there, right? And you don't know how to do it. So yeah. But yeah, hopefully this is helping what we are doing here. Good. Others, yeah, Ursula, and I see also Nana, you had your hand up.
I think Nana was good.
Yeah, but she's already had her turn, so she can wait until after you.
So what I realized after after the inquiry was, I think the feeling of isolation is firm, is very closely connected to the feeling of ego deficiency, not being good enough.
Yeah.
So I'm isolated because something is not wrong with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you, that is another layer of the P.
Yes. The P model
layer
is structured in a way where they kind of say this layer defends again this layer, defends again this layer. But it's not that set in stone. In a sense, the P model is too simplistic in that way. So just like Nana was saying, like, well, she's not using aggression or defensiveness as the first line of defense against the isolation. She's using optimism, right? And in the same way, maybe the isolation is not only a defense against the layer we're going to look at next time. For you, it's also a defense against the ego deficiency. Right?
I don't know if it's a defense, because it comes along with the ego deficiency, but that makes it worse.
Oh, it makes
much ego
deficiency worse. Ah, okay. But then it's interesting. Why do you isolate when you feel the ego deficiency?
No, I feel isolated. So perhaps people are talking with me or something, and then it comes up. Oh, the reason must be that I'm not okay.
Okay. So it's a. You feel the isolation, and then you invent an explanation for. First, you say the reason I feel the isolation is because other people are distancing themselves. Next, you say the fact that they're distancing themselves, you explain that and say, oh, that must be because I'm deficient. So these are layers on top. Now, notice something interesting. You say the feeling of isolation comes due to external circumstances, namely other people distancing themselves. You see where I'm going, right? My question was, why do you isolate? That question presupposes that you are doing it. It's not an effect of other people's actions. It's something you are actively involved in. Yes.
So others do something, and then I interpret, okay, they don't want to be with me or something.
Actually, I would suggest that maybe what other people do or don't do is irrelevant to the feeling.
Okay.
That you are actually much more involved in creating it, and that you are creating it for a purpose. But you might not be aware of that purpose, what that purpose is, because you can say, why would I create a horrible feeling like isolation? I hate the feeling. Why would I do that? It makes no sense that you would do it. And therefore, you assume you're not doing it. But the invitation here is to say, if you were doing it, what might the purpose be? And that's what we're going to talk about after the break.
Thank you.
Cool, thanks. So, Nana, and then maybe a break. Or, no, Alex, you have as well. Yeah. And Rachel. Okay, Nana.
Okay, it was just a short comment. It's because it's a really interesting topic, this. I'm sorry, but it's because I was thinking that, I mean, the hero's journey would say that it's a dark night of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the sense of oneness or the peak point. Then once you know you cannot not know, then you go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take that deep dive. And I don't know, I mean, I'm not sure I can commit to the dark night of the soul. I don't think it exists. I think it's more the dark night of the ego. I mean, it's like you're peeling off a layer, or like when you talk about going from isolation to the beast, and then further, and just to realize there is only essence and love at the end. But it's like, and I think, yeah, I just wanted to comment on that.
The name,
why does this happen?
the name might be misleading, because you say it might be, but it's surely it must be the ego that's experiencing it. And you can say, yeah, exactly. Of course. But I mean, for historical reasons, it's been called the Dark Night of the Soul.
Yeah, I know. I did a long chapter in my book about this because I don't really understand why he uses that term back then in the poem. But it's because, I mean, the soul would never have a dark night, would it really?
But this is just like what you refer to with the different names, right? So
why I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the darkness we experience, the darkness that Amanda talks about. This why do I create this?
Yes.
Fall. I mean, Joseph Campbell, you would say you're created to sort of peel off a part of your ego, allowing your ego to destroy. To destroy itself a bit.
Yeah.
And then again and again, like a circular movement.
Yes.
So it's more.
I think the dark night of the soul is a more evocative phrase that captures better captures what it feels like.
Yeah.
Whereas the dark night of the ego might be more like a technical term that sort of try to capture what it is. But if you go like, I'm experiencing a dark night of the ego, not many people are going to go like, okay, fine. But if you say, you know, my soul is in anguish, they go like, oh yeah, I can relate to that, right? So I think sometimes we have to see... there's a discrepancy between technical language and poetic evocative language that's trying to capture some of the subjective experience rather than sort of looking at it from the outside and going, no, but surely it's the ego because the soul is already unified with God and so on and cannot have a dark night and these kind of things.
Because it opens to, that was why I thought, okay, like meeting the beast, why do we have to meet the beast? And that's exactly this, we will do it again and again. And if I don't expect it, it will happen anyway. So I will just, I mean, like you said, the comfort of knowing that meeting the beast is part of life.
Yeah.
It's not part of improving anything. It's just the natural cycles of life.
Ah, okay. I see what you mean.
Or would you say that?
Yeah. I think I have a slightly different, but I'd like to get back to sort of the just let's experience it. And I'd like to also, let's take a few more comments because the next piece, I want to make sure we have enough time for it.
Okay, sorry.
Cool. No worries. But it's like, let's return to these discussions after the next section when we know we have time for it. Alex and then Rachel, and then let's go for a break.
One thing that I'm noticing at the moment is that I largely feel kind of lost,
mm-hmm.
or like difficulty relating to to the topic.
Good.
In general somehow. But what I noticed in my inquiry that just kind of stood out to me as just odd is that, you know, last week it seemed like the states that we were experiencing brought up a lot of resistance in me. So it just was like, oh no, I don't do that. Like I really had to look and kind of find my way in. And with this one, as I was describing it, and I kind of realized, yeah, I feel it then and then and then and then, and it's like all these examples and everything. And then at some point I almost felt like I was proud of it or something, or some kind of like very different relationship to it. It's like, yeah, this is my space. This is like a badge of honor of some kind or some sort of.
What causes you to feel like this in those situations?
You mean in what situations do I feel isolated like that?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, it seemed like a lot. So I think I heard some of them actually mention like feeling of inadequacy, if I feel criticized, whether internal or external, and I very quickly feel like, well, I'm never going to be good enough anyway, so why bother? And therefore I'm alone and kind of if I feel intense pain of rejection, for instance, I really go very quickly into world and unsafe. Many, many ways of feeling unsafe. And
let me put the question differently. Does the external environment play a part in the creation of this feeling?
Well, it's me reacting to the external, certain external things, yeah.
Yeah, so in theory, it's like, because this is, last time, maybe sometimes what I see is like if last time you go like, this is just me and I didn't have to be like that, I didn't have to be aggressive and defensive, but sometimes I am, right? That's hard to see as a badge of honor. But if you say, well, you know, my parents, the world, or external circumstances have put me in situations where I have felt this hard feeling, it's, you might not feel so much personally responsible for the feeling. And sometimes that makes it easier to accept that it's there.
No, actually, I actually do feel like I withdraw.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I withdraw, but it's almost like, yeah, and that's.
But would you withdraw if others didn't criticize you? If others people didn't reject you?
I guess not, there wouldn't be anything to withdraw from.
Yeah, exactly. The slightly odd suggestion that I give in this and the next section is maybe you would find a reason to withdraw no matter what, because it serves a purpose.
That's what that feels like, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I want to. Like
exactly.
It's a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like it's actually the right thing.
Exactly. And this is interesting, right? Because if it's the right thing, then what is it that would... You must solve a problem by doing it. What's the problem you solve?
Yeah, it does feel like solving a problem, actually. It does feel like some kind of... Like the sense that I really have is that this is an absolutely the right thing to do. The only thing to do.
And it couldn't be the right thing and the only right thing to do if it didn't solve a very important problem. But it's interesting, you don't seem to be quite aware of what the problem you are solving is. Good. So hopefully by the end of the evening you will develop more clarity. But for now, I'll just leave you with the question. Yeah.
Thanks.
So last one, Rachel.
Yeah, I'm just listening to all the others and trying to relate it to what I was feeling. I have noticed in the past the isolation a lot. It would have come up quite a bit on retreats that I've gone on when I've seen like where it looks like everybody else is connecting and I'm not.
Yes.
And I'm thinking that's not something they're doing, but it's maybe more highlighting to myself how I feel. Maybe the feeling was already there, but it's only then I'm comparing. To what is not necessarily true, because when I actually talk to other people, a lot of them are feeling discontented too. So I know logically that actually it's not the truth that they're all connected and I'm not. I know they're all struggling as well. But I know certainly if I went back a few years, I would have had a habit of feeling really isolated, running away, leaving the group, and then I think part of me really wanted someone to come after me, It was that kind of wanting someone to notice that I wasn't there and come and find me.
Yes.
So is that the purpose that isolation is serving, in that if someone came and found me, it would prove that actually they did like me and they did notice I wasn't there and
yes.
It was important.
That is definitely a common strategy, right? To try and disprove your feeling that people don't like you by isolating and then seeing, like, you know, waiting for people to notice and come get you. It's generally not a particularly useful strategy because, well, you know what happens most of the time, right? No, because everybody else is sitting somewhere waiting for you to find them. Yes, exactly. Good.
And then, like, when we talked about the different layers, what I've noticed was I did get called out on this behaviour by the guy who runs these retreats. So then it kind of I think that put another layer on top, because then I was like, well, I'm not allowed to do that. So instead I would sit in the room and I think I'd go into probably this defense thing, kind of sitting there, feeling like a prickly ball, push everyone away. But feeling like, well, I really want to run away, but I'm not allowed to because I'm not. And so then kind of getting very defensive.
Yes.
And if anyone had called me on that, they might have just got me to really attack.
Exactly, yeah.
So each one just building up something else. So wouldn't that be that helpful to point it out?
No, I think it's helpful to point it out if the pointing out of the pattern is accompanied with an inquiry into the purpose of the pattern. Because if you just point it out and go like, that's a dumb thing to do, stop doing it, right? It's like, you haven't fulfilled the purpose, so you're gonna keep following your strategy, but now there's just like a few roadblocks that you have to sort of get around in order to be allowed to follow your strategy. So it just complicates things. Yeah,
and I didn't really feel like there was much kind of looking into what was causing it.
No.
What was underneath it. Although, over the years, I have kind of got better now, and sometimes, you know, I'll kind of leave a group and isolate and I can spend 10 minutes and kind of connect with myself and what's going on. And then I can be like, oh, okay, now I can go back.
Yes, exactly right. Toilet breaks are very good for that.
I haven't thought of that.
You haven't thought, okay, here you go. Very, yes. Good. Let's do 10 minutes break and then come back for the next bit. So 1:45, we come back.